Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Dorothy Gundy and Brian Lynn. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, a South Korean research group says Russia exported more oil to North Korea than previously reported. A new report by the Seoul-based Asan Institute for Policy Studies suggests Russia set up a secret trading system to get around United Nations economic sanctions on North Korea. The report centers on the activities of Russia's independent petroleum company. IPC was targeted by the U.S. Treasury Department in June 2017 for violating restrictions on oil exports to North Korea. IPC was found to have sold large amounts of oil to Russian-linked companies, the report says. Some of the companies were used to cover up the oil exports to North Korea by falsifying information about which countries the supplies were shipped to. The report says one North Korean state company was found to have bought nearly 623,000 tons of Russian oil worth $238 million between 2015 and 2017. The Asan Group said it discovered the information in Russian customs documents. But the Korea International Trade Association in Seoul had reported only about $25 million in Russian oil sales between 2015 and 2017. The report says the U.S. State Department estimates North Korea had been importing around 4 million barrels of crude oil and 4.5 million barrels of processed oil each year. And China is North Korea's main oil supplier. Kyo Mang-yun is a North Korea expert with Asan. He says smuggling has always been an important part of cross-border trading between North Korea and its close allies. He said, "What the Chinese government and the Russian government, to a lesser extent, have been doing is to turn a blind eye to these activities." The information from Asan came after a report in the Wall Street Journal accused Russia of possibly violating international sanctions another way. That report said Russia issued work permits to more than 10,000 North Korean laborers since September to work in Russia. UN sanctions put in place in September of 2017 ban member countries from providing work authorization permits to North Korean workers. Russian officials denied the newspaper report. Last week, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, said she found the story credible. She said, "Reports of Russia violating UN Security Council resolutions on North Korean laborers working abroad are deeply troubling." In December of 2017, the UN Security Council strengthened the sanctions. They cut North Korean oil imports by about one-third, while placing a total export ban on coal and other mineral industries. The sanctions also affected $800 million in North Korean clothing manufacturing, as well as the country's seafood industry.
more than 130 people are now confirmed dead from a powerful earthquake that hit central Indonesia on Sunday. The numbers of dead and injured have risen since the 6.9 magnitude earthquake struck off the waters of Lombok Island. The quake also shook three small nearby islands called the Giles, Bali, Sumbawa, and parts of East Java. Thousands of homes and other buildings were damaged. Indonesian officials say the quake displaced about 156,000 people on Lombok. They have been forced to stay in emergency shelters. For years, Lombok has been a popular vacation getaway for Indonesians and foreigners alike. Days after the quake struck, the island's coast looked unusually empty, with many stores and hotels closed. Any hotels still open are refusing to accept new customers because of safety concerns. Eateries and underwater diving businesses have suspended operations on what is usually one of their busiest months of the year. It went from high season just a few days ago to absolutely nothing now, says Howard Singleton. He owns a seaside restaurant in the west coast town of Senggigi. From his restaurant, customers can enjoy watching the sun setting behind a volcano on neighboring Bali. Indonesian officials are still adding up earthquake losses. The National Disaster Mitigation Agency says the value of property destroyed and other damage could easily top $69 million. Many vacationers fled Lombok after Sunday's earthquake, which came a week after a 6.4 magnitude quake. We've had light earthquakes in the past, but never anything like this, said Marcel de Rijk, owner of Puri Mas Resort. His seaside hotel and villa community will stay closed until September for repairs. I don't think people will choose Lombok anymore this summer, he said. Cancellations of tour bookings for Lombok have increased, the Association of Indonesian Tours and Travel Agencies told Reuters. Both experts and tourist businesses say the island's economy will recover, but the next few months will be difficult. The quake could not have come at a worse time for Indonesian President Joko Widodo, who declared last month that Southeast Asia's largest economy needs dollars now. He spoke at the start of a campaign aimed at strengthening the value of the rupiah, Indonesia's money. The rupiah has lost about 6% against the United States dollar since the start of 2018. Financial watchers say investors have been fleeing Indonesia and other emerging markets as U.S. interest rates rise and world trade tensions increase. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Researchers say a new genetically modified rice can prevent infections of HIV, the virus responsible for the disease AIDS. The researchers recently published their findings in a study in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The team included scientists from America, Britain, and Spain. The study reports the newly developed rice produces proteins that attach directly to the HIV virus. This process prevents the virus from mixing with human cells. The scientists say this can neutralize the virus and block its transmission. The Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, or UNAIDS, reports that worldwide, nearly 37 million people were living with HIV in 2017. The organization says the largest number of those were in developing countries. Nearly two-thirds of HIV cases are in Africa. There is currently no cure for HIV/AIDS. But there have been major developments in oral drug treatments shown to slow the progression of the disease. Such treatments can also reduce the chances of passing the virus onto others. Researchers have also worked on finding a vaccine. UNAIDS says new HIV infections and AIDS-related deaths have been reduced by about 50% over the past two decades. The new study predicts the rice-based method will lead to long-term deployment of the anti-HIV treatment across the developing world. Researchers said the groundbreaking discovery is realistically the only way that anti-HIV combination treatments can be produced at a cost low enough for the developing world. The scientists say the easiest and most cost-effective way to use the rice will be to make it into a cream to be put on the skin. The HIV-fighting proteins can then enter the body through the skin. People in all parts of the world could grow the rice and make the cream themselves, the researchers said. This would prevent the cost and travel required for many patients to receive treatments and medicine, especially in the developing world. The scientific team says further testing is needed to make sure the genetic engineering process does not produce any additional chemicals that could be dangerous to people. The process of changing the genetic structure of food crops has been debated for some time. Such foods are commonly called GMOs, for genetically modified organisms, or GEs, meaning genetically edited. Critics of genetically engineered crops believe they can harm people. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. We begin the story of President Lyndon Johnson.
From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Lyndon Baines Johnson became America's 36th president suddenly.
Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th president of the United States.
On November 22, 1963, President John F. Kennedy was murdered. Kennedy and Johnson, his vice president, were in Dallas, Texas. Kennedy was shot as his open car drove through the city. Within a few hours, Johnson was sworn into office. The swearing-in took place on the presidential plane, Air Force One, at Dallas's Love Field. The plane returned to Andrews Air Force Base near Washington, carrying the new president and the body of the former president. At Andrews, President Johnson read a brief statement. He ended with these words, "I will do my best. That is all I can do. I ask for your help and God's." Before he was vice president, LBJ had served for many years in the Senate and the House of Representatives. He grew up in small towns in Texas. He finished high school at age 15. He traveled and worked for a few years before he entered Southwest Texas State Teachers College. There, he was a student leader and a political activist. In 1931, a newly elected congressman asked Johnson to work for him as his secretary in Washington. 4 years later, President Franklin Roosevelt appointed Johnson as Texas Director of Roosevelt's National Youth Administration. 2 years after that, in 1937, Johnson won a special election for a seat in the House of Representatives. He served in the House for 12 years. When the United States entered World War II, Johnson was the first member of Congress at that time to volunteer for active duty. After the war, he ran for the Senate, where he also served for 12 years. Johnson loved politics and became an expert in the operations of government. He would need all of that knowledge as president of a nation facing problems near and far. When Johnson took office, communist forces were fighting South Vietnamese troops supported by the United States. Also, there were continuing worries about nuclear war with the Soviet Union. At home, there was racial conflict. Many Americans were out of work, and there was the threat of a railroad strike. Johnson began his presidency by working hard for legislation that President Kennedy had proposed. Johnson had voted against civil rights legislation when he served in the Senate, but now he urged Congress to support the idea, and Congress agreed. The 1964 Civil Rights Act barred discrimination against minorities in jobs and in restaurants and other businesses.
We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin.
The president said that such a situation could not continue in America. To treat people unfairly because of their race, he said, violated the Constitution and the idea of democracy. Lyndon Johnson succeeded in getting Congress to pass more civil rights legislation in 1965 and 68.
Many of the issues of civil rights are very complex and most difficult. But about this, there can and should be no argument. Every American citizen must have an equal right to vote. There is no reason which can excuse the denial of that right. There is no duty which weighs more heavily on us than the duty we have to ensure that right.
Many southern states used so-called literacy tests as a way to deny blacks the right to vote.
The Negro citizen may go to register only to be told that the day is wrong, or the hour is late, or the official in charge is absent. And if he persists, and if he manages to present himself to the registrar, he may be disqualified because he did not spell out his middle name, or because he abbreviated a word on the application. And if he manages to fill out an application, he is given a test. The registrar is the sole judge of whether he passes this test. He may be asked to recite the entire Constitution or explain the most complex provisions of state law. And even a college degree cannot be used to prove that he can read and write.
The Civil Rights Act of 1965 said states could not prevent citizens from voting just because they could not read very well. The 1968 law barred discrimination against blacks in housing. Johnson was from the South. That and his ability to persuade people helped him get Southern conservatives in Congress to support the civil rights legislation. He also had other ideas for a better America. He called his plan the Great Society. He talked about it in a speech at the University of Michigan.
The Great Society rests on abundance and liberty for all. It demands an end to poverty and racial injustice, to which we're totally committed in our time. But that is just the beginning. The Great Society is a place where every child can find knowledge to enrich his mind and to enlarge his talents.
Johnson launched the War on Poverty, a series of bills designed to help the poor. But his efforts to pay for social programs and a war overseas led to inflation. Vietnam was not the only place where Johnson used military force. In 1965, he sent more than 20,000 troops to intervene in the Dominican Republic. He worried that a revolution could lead to a communist takeover of that Caribbean nation. Lyndon Johnson served the last 14 months of President Kennedy's term. Then, in 1964, he ran for a full term. The Democratic Party strongly supported him and accepted his choice of Hubert Humphrey for vice president. Humphrey was a liberal senator from the state of Minnesota. Unlike the Democrats, the Republicans had a difficult time choosing their presidential candidate. Delegates at the party's nominating convention finally chose Barry Goldwater. Goldwater was a strongly conservative senator from Arizona.
Certainly, simple honesty is not too much to demand of men in government. And let our republicanism, so focused and so dedicated, not be made fuzzy and futile by unthinking and stupid labels. I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice. And let me remind you also that moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
The Republican candidate for vice president was William Miller, a congressman from New York State. Americans voted in November of 1964. Lyndon Johnson won more than 60% of the popular vote. Still, he had hoped for an even bigger victory. He wanted proof that Americans were voting for him and not the shadow of John Kennedy. In his inaugural speech, Johnson said his great society would never be finished. It would keep growing and improving.
I do not believe that the great society is the ordered, changeless, and sterile battalion of the ants. It is the excitement of becoming, always becoming, trying, probing, falling, resting, and trying again, but always trying and always gaining.
In 1965, he won congressional approval of Medicare, a health insurance program for Americans age 65 and older. President Harry Truman had called for such a plan 20 years earlier. Johnson presented Truman and his wife Bess with Medicare cards numbers 1 and 2. Under Johnson, Congress also approved Medicaid, a health care program for the poor and disabled. In 1967, President Johnson appointed the nation's first black justice to the Supreme Court, Thurgood Marshall. Around the country, President Johnson faced growing opposition to the war in Vietnam. More and more American troops were dying. Lyndon Johnson may have wanted to be remembered as a great president, but the war came to redefine his presidency.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.